My father's store was located at 163 West South Temple. The store to the east was the Utah Nippo building, the local Japanese newspaper run by Mr. Terawasa. Just east of that was a second-hand store run by Spitzer. 100 years further, on the corner of West Temple and South Temple, the Bamberger Depot had lines going to Ogden. Its track ran behind our store. Further west was a grocery store. In fact, two grocery stores were on that block. Going east, there was a small Japanese restaurant owned by Mr. and Mrs. Kanigai. Next to that, an alley led into an open courtyard surrounded by a rooming house, a two-story adobe building, where quite a few Japanese bachelors stayed. I don't remember the name of it now, but it used to be particular judo and kendo in that hall. All of this was actually one block south of Japanese Town, which was on First South. They had more Japanese store, a fish market, restaurants, the Rocky Mountain newspaper, several rooming houses, and another dry goods store which rivaled my dad's. For half a block, there was also a row of open stall vegetables markets run primarily by Italians and Japanese. They even had a public bath on First South between 2nd and 3rd West, an area that was mostly filled in gullies. The public bath was oblong-shaped, about 10 feet by 20 feet, a pretty large place. We'd go there after a baseball or judo practice. You know how the Japanese take baths to relax. They take a little pan, soap, and a cloth, and then they throw the water over themselves, get everything as clean as possible, then wash the soap off. Then they get into the bath. Naturally, they don't wash off because they're already clean. It's the temperature that makes you look hot, like a red-legged lobster. It's really hot. There was a diving partition for men on one side, women on the other. You'd carry your little towel with you if you wanted to cover yourself strategically, but we didn't bother as kids. We spent maybe 10 minutes to scrub the dirt off, then sit around for a while. Later we'd go back and get a snack at the Pagadoa restaurant, which was about half a block away. My father's full name was Edward Diagro Hashimoto. He was born in Wakayama Prefecture, the southernmost province of Pacific side of Japan. As it was a Japanese custom for the eldest son to go out and earn a living, my father was invited by his uncle to come to America. He arrived in 1896 at the age of 16. He had no formal training and very little education except a Japanese high school one. With his uncle, he started his American life in Seattle, where the Great Northern Western Railroad terminated, then moved to Los Angeles, Montana, and eventually Ogden and Salt Lake when the Denver and Rio Grande was built. His life was much more interesting than mine. He was sent out on the Great Northern Railway as a cook. He didn't know anything about cooking. Once they gave him a 100-pound sack of flour and a ham to cook for the railroad workers in his little section. He made flour balls and cooked them in salt water, which doesn't sound very edible. Since the ham was covered with mold, as all hams were in those days, he thought he had gone bad and gave it away to a tramp. Those poor workers had to subsist on 100 pounds of flour for a whole month. As far as telling us stories about his early years, father rarely spoke of his adventures and was known as the Great Silent Hashimoto. He very rarely said anything at all except to grunt in the affirmative or the negative. At the time, though, the railroad gangs were mostly Oriental, Chinese or Japanese, or Irish, and the cowboys in Montana didn't like foreigners invading their country and putting the iron monster through their open plains. One time, some drunken cowboy came into the railroad camp and shot it up, killing some of the laborers. Father escaped and hid it out in the mountains. After a month of walking alone during the night and hiding out in the daytime, he walked about 500 miles en route to Salt Lake City. He studied a lot by himself. As a result, he became a better educated man than most college graduates and an influential individual around here. He established the E.D. Hashimoto Company, a country store. I remember there was a big basement which had a warehouse. Essentially, all sorts of canned stuff were down there that would be sent out to the gangs on the railroad. He stocked rice, soy sauce, and other Japanese food. Upstairs, he had clothing, suits, overalls, shoes, sacks, and underwear. I remember working during my high school days, loading 100-pound stacks of rice and taking them down and shipping them out to various section gangs. But that was the 1920s. 20 years earlier, my father had been very instrumental in furnishing laborers for the building of the Western Pacific Railroad. He contracted thousands of workers from Japan, arranging their transportation here and set them out in gangs, consisting of maybe 10 people, along the railroad so they could maintain these rails. He furnished them with food and clothing. The railroad paid him, and he, in return, paid his laborers, who, for a privilege of coming to America, paid him $1 a month. He had a lifetime pass on the Western Pacific Railroad because of his job as a labor agent. He was a contractor and a paymaster, the whole works. During the time the gangs worked, he had a steady income of $1,000 or $2,000 a month. All this in 1900. Dad died at an early age, 60, with diabetes. I remember he got the first insulin that came from the Rockies. It wasn't too purified, and he had to be injected with it. And as those days were hectic sometimes, if you get a little too much, you'd wind up in the hospital in insulin shock. If you didn't have enough, you'd be in a coma. So I grew up at Holy Cross Hospital since he was there half the time. But he never let it slow him down. After the railroads were completed and up until his death, he was always busy doing something. He was 50 years ahead of his time, but always underfinanced. He got this idea, gallop off, and before he could get the thing rolling, he ran out of money. He was also called boom or bust Hashimoto. He'd be dead broke 1 year and rolling around in dough the next. Of course, he always had a battle against the fact that he was a foreigner, and obviously you can't change the color of your hair or the color of your skin. Edward Hashimoto, 73, professor of gross anatomy.